From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point, coming to you from Tampa and the Republican National Convention. Mitt Romney has fought a long time to be the man on the GOP convention stage tonight. The Republican pick, signed, sealed, delivered to take on Barack Obama. This whole week, rain-soaked and packaged and lit for TV, has been a long drum roll to Romney's big speech tonight. He's on with a lot to do this hour on Point. All eyes on Mitt Romney. You can join the conversation. What do you want, expect, need to hear from Mitt Romney tonight? What does he have yet to say to you, to the country? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. And you can comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. We are in Tampa in the convention center, the hall behind us. Everything in preparation now. There will be a long drum roll of speakers this evening, and then Mitt Romney. Let's get in the history, the Wayback Machine, not so far, just 4 years ago. For just a moment, Minneapolis-St. Paul, 2008, John McCain was nearly drowned out in his moment 4 years ago by the applause of cheering delegates as he concluded his acceptance address.
Stand up. Stand up. Stand up and fight. Nothing is inevitable here.
We make history, but not all the way to the White House. It was McCain, Palin, of course. At that convention, the VP pick, nominee, the running mate, Sarah Palin, took a punch at Barack Obama and his perceived celebrity status.
When the cloud of rhetoric has passed, when the roar of the crowd fades away, when the stadium lights go out, and those styrofoam Greek columns are hauled back to some studio lot... What exactly is our opponent's plan?
Sarah Palin in 2008, and just for a second, the really Wayback Machine, the guy that Mitt Romney would like to channel a little bit tonight, maybe more than a little, 1980, the Republican National Convention in Detroit, Ronald Reagan spoke about his vision to renew America.
I will not stand by and watch this great country destroy itself under mediocre leadership that drifts from one crisis to the next, eroding our national will and purpose. We have come together here because the American people deserve better from those to whom they entrust our nation's highest offices. And we stand united. We stand united in our resolve to do something about it.
Ronald Reagan, 1980, the man tonight, Mitt Romney. Here he was last October, one of the debates, closing a primary debate at the campus of Dartmouth College. His big summation on his motivation and qualifications to be president.
My experience will help us get our values strong, get our economy strong, and make sure that our military is second to none in the world. I am absolutely devoted to making America the strongest nation on earth. And if you don't want that as your objective, don't vote for me.
But he wants your vote now, and he is the Republican nominee. We will hear in a moment from University of Virginia presidential historian Brian Ballow. Joining me now in Tampa is Major Garrett, White House correspondent for the National Journal. Major, it's great to have you here tonight.
Tom, it's great to see you in person.
And with us in Tampa is Congressman Michael Burgess, formerly a practicing obstetrician. He's Republican representing Texas' 26th District, which includes the northern part of the Dallas-Fort Worth area, a member of the Congressional Tea Party Caucus. Congressman, welcome back to you as well. It's good to have you with us.
Thanks, Tom. Good to be with you, sir.
So, Major, begin to walk us into the... What's the lineup going to be? I mean, the primo speakers have been coming on very late at night, so there's a lot
by
of
design.
Folks...
Yes.
By design, there's a lot of folks in advance of that. Who is it tonight?
Well, before that, Tom, I just want to say on behalf of all fans, as I am, of Mr. Peabody and Sherman, thank you very much for the Wayback Machine.
Yeah, okay, good. The Wayback Machine is with us. Now let's go just a little forward. What are we going to have before 11 o'clock
okay,
tonight?
Okay, no Republican convention on its ultimate night would be complete without a Ronald Reagan tribute video, and that's what we'll begin about 7 o'clock tonight, and then Calista Gingrich and Newt Gingrich, a rival of Mitt Romney's during the primaries. They will give a presentation.
Tough rival. Went after him hard.
Indeed,
but was bested
by Romney in Florida and his campaign. That is to say, Gingrich has collapsed immediately thereafter. Then Craig Romney will speak. Craig Romney is the one Romney son, one of the five, who speaks Spanish fluently, already been deployed by the Romney campaign.
We've heard
in Spanish-speaking ads, and will be deployed much more in the coming days. And then after that, there will be many people from Massachusetts who will burnish the record of Mitt Romney as governor of Massachusetts.
His home base for many years in business and in government.
Something that the Obama campaign has said, well, they never want to talk about Massachusetts. Well, tonight, for a good period of time, the Massachusetts story will be brought out in full relief. And then three Olympians, Mike Ruzioni, Derek Parra, and Kim Rohde. Mike Ruzioni, for those like me who remember it well, captain of the Miracle on Ice hockey team in 1980. And then Marco Rubio will set up the moment that I think it is fair to say everyone in Tampa has been waiting for. Mitt Romney will come. And it is, Tom, no coincidence whatsoever that before Paul Ryan took the stage last night, it was a Hispanic leader in the Republican Party, a new fresh face, Susana Martinez, Republican governor from New Mexico, the first female Hispanic governor of either party in American history, setting up Paul Ryan. And tonight, Marco Rubio, another fresh face, Latino Republican, setting up Mitt Romney. The party's message in these primetime moments is this is a more diverse party than you've probably heard advertised. There are constitutional statewide officers of significance. We want to show them to you on the national stage.
There are definitely those officers of significance. You look out at the crowd, though, it is
almost uniformly white. Absolutely. Yeah,
there it is. Congressman Burgess, here we are. You've seen the whole long primary contest, and it was tough. You've seen Mitt Romney on the campaign trail, not just this time out, but, you know, before he's been there and didn't quite make it. This time he's the one with all that. And with this week, and Ann Romney and Paul Ryan last night and the whole long setup, what do you think the country, the voters, need to hear from Mitt Romney tonight?
Well, first off, it has been a long primary process, and I was working for another candidate, but back in Iowa when it was so cold outside, and it's kind of ironic here we are sweltering in the Tampa heat and humidity. But, you know, I've heard people say that Romney needs to personalize things. He's regarded sometimes as not that easy to get close to emotionally. So I think you'll see some of that, but personally, and just speaking for myself, I'm not a member of their campaign, but that's not what I need to see most. What I need to see most, Paul Ryan sort of set the stage last night with talking about, you know, it doesn't have to be this way. There is a better place to be. And now Mr. Romney, the change agent, the CEO, he needs to come out and tell us not just where we're going, how we're going to get there.
Mitt Romney knows that this is an issue. He looks at the polls. They're the likability ratings, and President Obama way ahead of him on those. But whether or not that determines people's actual vote, another question. Here he was sitting down with the Fox News' Chris Wallace. This was in the New Hampshire summer home, sitting with Ann Romney recently. This is an interview that aired Sunday. Chris Wallace asked Mitt Romney whether it bothered him that polls show most people unimpressed with his likability.
You know, all I can do is be who I am. Remember that Popeye line, I am what I am, and that's all what I am? And I'm doing my very best to try and get this country back on track to help the people who need to be sure they can find a good job, that they can have a secure retirement, that their child will get the kind of education their child needs. These are things people worry about, and I know how to help make those things happen, and that's why I'm in the race.
Well, okay, here we are, Mitt, Major. It's his night. Can he have it that way? Can he talk policy, not really try to gush or reveal or open his heart to America? What's the plan, Major?
Well, the Romney campaign lifted an embargo at 6 o'clock Eastern on excerpts, partial excerpts of Governor Romney's speech. And there's very
pretty
little
extensive
in there.
Looking at them here.
Yes, but there's nothing in there that would constitute any sort of public podium-side psychoanalysis. He didn't perform any open-heart surgery on his underlying psyche, and I don't think he's going to. Every signal that Mitt Romney has sent is this election is something about much bigger than me, and it's about where this country finds itself and what Republicans like to regard and rhetorically say is a crossroads. And everything that we can see in the excerpts are about his forward vision, a little bit about his private life, but not much. And I think what we've seen is what we've seen in the past is what we're going to get tonight, an explication of his top priorities, why he believes he's a leader for the times, and not very much of the personalization thing that he is told repeatedly he needs to do. And there's significant polling data this week that seems to indicate this race is tied. Tied nationally, but that the Romney-Ryan ticket is gaining momentum in states like Michigan, Wisconsin. And that would tell someone like Mitt Romney, you don't need to worry about likability. Define the race as you're comfortable defining it. Be comfortable in your skin and that will be your path to success.
What do you think of that analysis? It's good for Congressman Burgess here. He's in the Tea Party caucus. He's from Texas. He wasn't originally for Mitt Romney, but he's on board now. He doesn't need a big reveal. In a tied race, is it worth it to open up a little bit, or do you think he's right in his calculation, perhaps, that he just doesn't need to? I am who I am.
My experience covering presidential politics, and this is true in congressional politics, mayoral politics, people who run for governor, you have to be comfortable on a repetitive basis, day in and day out, hour to hour, with who you are. And if you try to manufacture something on the fly or in a moment of stress or in a moment of need, you tend to forget it. And you lose it, and you lose attachment to yourself. And voters pick up on this. And it's been my experience, Democrat and Republican, candidates who are confident about who they are, their strengths and their limitations, tend to succeed better than those who try to swap places with either or both.
Do you see a man, Congressman, who's confident in his own skin in Mitt Romney?
Oh, yeah, I do. And I'll just tell you, you're right. I was supporting a different candidate earlier.
Who was that again?
Newt Gingrich.
Okay.
He was going to speak tonight.
He'll speak tonight.
And the speaker. Still have a lot of affection for the speaker. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it was when the July numbers came out, and the unemployment numbers, and mm-hmm. We normally have a Joint Economic Committee hearing on that. We didn't this year for whatever reason, I guess the holiday. But it was on the news, and Governor Romney was interviewed shortly after that, and he looked into the camera and he said, "I'm just here to tell you, it doesn't have to be this way." I teared up. I mean, here is somebody who, yeah, he really does feel the pain, and he's telling us, you don't have to live like this. We can do it differently, and we can be successful.
We've heard that message this week, and we may no doubt hear it again tonight. Congressman Michael Burgess of Texas, Major Garrett of the National Journal. Please stand by. Listeners, you can join us. What do you want? What do you expect? What do you need to hear from Mitt Romney tonight? 800-423-TALK. This is On Point. Point in Tampa at the Republican National Convention D last night. Music there from the convention hall this afternoon as the crowds began to assemble, the crowds of delegates and more. We are in the home stretch to Mitt Romney's big speech tonight, looking at the man, the moment, and what he needs to do. Major Garrett of the National Journal is with us here in Tampa. Congressman Michael Burgess of Texas, 26th District, is here, member of the Tea Party Congress caucus. You can join us as well. What do you want, expect, need to hear from Mitt Romney tonight? What do you make of this man, his views, his path to this moment? Do you need to connect, know his heart, or do you know enough? And undecideds, what are you waiting for? What would turn you yes or no on Mitt Romney? Is there something he could say? 800-423-8255 is our number. 800-423-TALK. We were out and around at the convention this afternoon. Here talking, this was a conservative radio host, and there are a lot of them here down the row from me. We asked John Frederick. So the John Frederick Show calls himself the conservative voice of Virginia. What he wanted to see in Mitt Romney's speech tonight.
Certainly not in a speech in an hour are you going to lay out a policy wonk of specifics. But I think we need to see a couple of key examples that are going to back up his overall vision. I think Mitt Romney has a branding problem, and it's not branding who he is. It's branding what he believes and what he's going to do.
Mitt Romney has a branding problem, says our conservative talk show neighbor here in Tampa. What about that, Major? Is there a branding problem with Mitt Romney? If so, what?
Some Republicans I've talked to here on the floor, delegates, look at Mitt Romney and think he is a transitional figure for the party, not someone who is immersed in the conservative ideology that has been definitional in the Republican Party since the Reagan era, and someone who largely missed the Tea Party revolution mm-hmm. or the Tea Party-inspired push towards fiscal conservatism of a different kind than President George W. Bush. He was sort of AWOL in that entire grassroots uprising within the Republican Party. So he sort of missed the Republican Reagan era. When he ran in 1994, he said, "I'm not a Reagan-Bush Republican." Then he missed the Tea Party era and its transformative power within the Republican Party, and yet he's the nominee. He's mm-hmm. a curious fellow in that regard, mm-hmm. someone who did not walk astride either the two most important, or even the Gingrich Revolution. Mm-hmm. Those three Republican movements since 1980 or 1976, he wasn't a part of any of them.
And so yet, he'd be a transitional figure should he take the White House to what?
To what I think many delegates I've talked to regard as this new bumper crop of young Republicans, symbolized in part by Paul Ryan, but also by Nikki Haley, the governor of South Carolina, Marco Rubio from Florida, Susana Martinez, Brian Sandoval of Nevada.
More stern, natural conservatives than Mitt Romney, perhaps.
And perhaps more schooled in what Republicans are talking about, at least at the state level, innovative practices there, pension reform, mortgage intervention, doing something with immigration in their states that is not being done at the federal level.
Are you saying these things wouldn't happen in a Romney administration, or that he would somehow be a concierge to bring them on in later?
Well, what I think they look at if there was a Romney administration is that there is a number of big issues, federal issues, that would have to be dealt with instantly. Reforming the tax code, if you can, dealing with Medicare, Medicaid, what are the future of that? Do you have the votes? Can you find the votes to eradicate the president's health care law? Do you fundamentally take out of the code the Dodd-Frank law? You know, much of what this campaign seems to be defined by, Tom, is a desire upon Mitt Romney and Paul Ryan to take the country back to January 19th, 2009. The day before President Obama took office, and set in motion 2 years of very aggressive activism on behalf of the Democratic Party. And after that, it's hard to know exactly what Mitt Romney would do. Mm-hmm. He has a vague idea of tax reform, but the most important priorities seem to be taking out
rollback
what is now in the federal code, what President Obama put in his first 2 years.
Excising Obama time. Congressman, do you see Mitt Romney as a transitional figure to a Tea Party future?
No, in some respects, we're all transitional figures, aren't we? Because
there is no permanence
to what we do. But honestly,
You're a philosopher, Congressman.
No, I'm just a simple country doctor. I think when you look at what could be accomplished during a Romney administration, I am so grateful that he chose Paul Ryan as running mate. I am so grateful that some big things have been put out there as referenda on which the people will be voting. Obamacare, to be sure. Reformation of the tax code. A lot of people weren't talking about that back in the primaries, but in fact that has emerged because we're up against this cliff with existing tax policy December 31st. Mm-hmm. Going into next year, there needs to be an overhaul of the tax code. And whether you're a retail sales tax person or a flat taxer as I am, there is going to be great momentum for doing something differently than what has been accomplished in the past. We've made the tax code so complex and complicated that no one understands it. And we've made law violators out of average Americans because they don't know how to comply with the code.
So you're looking for change right there. Let's begin to bring our listeners in from Boston. Dusty is calling. Hi, Dusty. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me.
Sure. What do you think?
I'm a small businessman, Tom, in eastern Massachusetts. I'm an independent, and I don't know any small business people here in Massachusetts that like Obama, and for the most part, everybody I talk to like Romney. I don't think Romney has done a particularly good job so far in getting at his strengths to the electorate. And I want to see him tonight point out and remind everyone that the United States government is the largest and most complex organization in the world. It requires high-level management skills in order to run it. He has those management skills. He's been successful in numerous organizational settings, and he brings, of the guys that are running, he brings by far the best management talent to the job.
So you like the manager in Mitt Romney, the CEO in Mitt Romney. Do you need to know his heart? Do you need to see him be more likable, more relatable, Dusty?
I need him to prioritize and plan effectively as a manager and take action. There are endless numbers of minutiae, policy issues, positions that he could take on, social issues and a range of other things that he's likely to get dragged down into. None of those things matter when juxtaposed with the priorities that our national government faces. So he's Dusty,
let me pick it up right there, if I may, and I really appreciate your call. Major, we haven't had a businessman president for a long time. Herbert Hoover is cited as the last one in the White House.
Herbert Hoover is cited as the last one, and he is his presidency doesn't hold up nearly as well as his pre-presidency. His pre-presidency, he was one of the great outstanding
great
citizens
manager.
Of the world.
Yep.
And one of the heroes of the early 20th century, globally, not just in the United States. But as a president, he was ideologically rooted in an approach to the Depression that turned out to be very damaging, both politically and for those who were most deeply affected by the unemployment.
What about now? Does a corporate manager make a great president? Does he make a great candidate? Is that what people will say? Yeah,
I don't see any comparisons between Herbert Hoover and Mitt Romney, because I don't think Mitt Romney is as rooted deeply in an ideology of any kind. I think he's governed in Massachusetts as someone who was a practitioner of practical results. Now, that was partly because he had a lopsidedly Democratic legislature. But we've talked here at the National Journal. We've had a series of events all this week with top Romney advisors. And to a T, they explain when describing what they think might surprise the country the most, and this might displease the congressman to my left here.
Our Tea Party caucuser.
To my left geographically. That if elected president, Governor Romney would not only reach out to Democrats, but actively seek their participation in not necessarily huge compromises, but things that would move the agenda forward and create practical solutions that may not be regimentally in line with the conservative orthodoxy that so many of those delegates on the floor and those who supported him in the primaries might like to see.
Congressman, will he have a rebellion on his hands?
No, absolutely not. Absolutely not. Look, there was a big FDA bill that was signed into law July 9th. You don't know about it. You don't know. You're the press. You didn't report it. The president signed that bill in the broom closet off the Oval Office. Why? Because he's been running against the House Republicans for a year and a half. He did not want to acknowledge that the system worked. A bill passed in the House, Republicans and Democrats compromising, passed in the Senate. And then the bicameral
Mitt Romney goes a little bit centrist, a little bit pragmatic to bring Democrats in. Will that create a prairie fire among Tea Party people?
No, I don't think so. I don't think so. And it depends upon where you're going with your overall agenda, to be sure. Mm-hmm. But look, we compromise all the time. The highway bill that was done this summer was a compromise. But nobody wants to talk about the fact that Congress does occasionally work. What you want to talk about is when we don't work, and that's the headline.
Well, heaven knows there's been a lot of the don't work as well. I mean, we have seen that. So let me get another call right here. Fort Lauderdale, Florida. Dana, thanks for calling. Dana, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. How are you?
Pretty well. What do you think?
Well, you asked basically what would I like to hear from the Republican National Convention or any Republican in general, period, is, you know what, I would really just like to hear the truth. If your platform is so persuasive and so good for everybody, why do you have to lie? Why do you have to misrepresent? Ryan came down here, brought his mother on stage. He hugged her. He kissed her. He looked
why
at
not?
Her adoringly. And then he lied to her and everybody else out there.
About what,
Obama.
Dana?
About everything that he spoke about, anything that had to do with President Obama, with Medicare, with welfare. I mean, for Christ's sakes, we know that's a lie. And yet you journalists are really dropping the ball. David Gregory doesn't say a word. Everybody just lets them get away with this stuff. It's a lie.
Dana, let us pick it up right there. We got it. We got your perspective. But it is not the case that nobody's pointing at that. I mean, look at the Washington Post today, their editorial page, by no means a liberal editorial page. And their big headline is Mr. Ryan's misleading speech. They call it a slashing and in many elements misleading indictment of President Obama. They say a party that claims to be willing to make hard choices ought to be prepared to spell some of them out. They say they skewered the president, unjustly in the speech over the Bull Simpson thing, which he didn't embrace it. But then Paul Ryan was on that commission and unwilling to go along with some prominent Republican senators who wanted to go with it. So, I mean, there is attention to it. But
you can find all that also at National Journal's website. And to the congressman's point, we followed the FDA bill very closely. Minutia and detail like that is very important in the National Journal, and we covered it, and we would continue to cover and do cover every compromise or lack thereof on Capitol Hill.
Major, pick Dana up. Here's a voter who hears the conversation, and especially in convention weeks, you get the big, soaring phrases and the big kind of statements from the podium, and she says, we've got a misleading picture being painted here.
Sure, and there are justifiable complaints to be made about the truthfulness of Paul Ryan when he talks about Medicare, for example, and I think I've pointed it out on your show before, when he says, nothing in my plan would change anything for current seniors. Well, that's not precisely true. If you eradicate the president's health care law, that does make changes in the existing Medicare Part D prescription drug allocation, that would be less generous than it currently is under the president's health care law. That would be a change. Mm-hmm. That would take away at least some benefits that were incrementally enlarged under the president's health care law.
Actually,
the bigger changes in Medicare would come later, surely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But there are a couple of things in the president's health care law that if you eliminate it and don't replace it, would change the existing benefit structure, which is slightly more generous with prescription drugs than the old system was.
There's a lot we could point to there. I want to come back to that, but if I may, we've got standing by Brian Ballow here, Congressman Burgess and Major Garrett. Brian Ballow is professor of history at the University of Virginia, co-host of Radio's Backstory with the American History Guys. Brian Ballow, welcome to On Point. Thank you so much for being with us.
Delighted to be here.
Here we are in convention time. Americans have done this for a long, long time. It used to be the real deal, lots of cigar smoke and real deals made at conventions. That's deep history now. What do you make of what conventions have become and Mitt Romney's challenge as he goes before a big media audience tonight, Professor Ballow?
What I make of it, Tom, is that it's one of the few opportunities that, in this case, Mitt Romney has to reach people who are not paying as much attention to politics as everybody you've talked to so far. So I've been listening carefully to what the representative and Major Garrett had to say, your callers, mm-hmm. and they make terrific points, but I think they miss the point about this opportunity for Mitt Romney, which is to reach an audience of undecided voters who probably don't pay a lot of attention. And where I really disagree with what's been said is I do think that Mitt Romney needs to be personal. His unfavorable ratings are as low as any candidate since Walter Mondale. And I worked for Walter Mondale. I know how unfavorable Walter Mondale was. And he's got to address that. I think he's got to close the empathy gap. People aren't going to believe that he is a regular guy. They don't even want him to be, but they need to understand that he feels their pain the way Bill Clinton was able to make people feel.
Really? I mean, this is no Bill Clinton. Major says you can't make yourself over. And to go from Mitt Romney to Bill Clinton, that would be a pretty major makeover. He's neck and neck with Barack Obama without that makeover. It looks to Major Garrett like that's not a bad position to be in. The economy is still very rough out there. Who says he needs to close an empathy gap?
I appreciate the Major pun, but I do disagree with Major. Mitt Romney does not have to make himself over. He simply has to give an address tonight that takes advantage of a rather unique opportunity to reach the kind of voters that he often can't reach. Mitt Romney is a terrific politician in small groups. He's great at raising money. He's good with interest groups. And we have reason to believe he's a very good manager. He doesn't need to prove any of those things tonight. He needs to do what Jeb Bush said he needs to do. He needs not to have major heart transplant in a psychological way. He needs to show his heart. And not that Mitt asked me, but I think the way he can do that very easily is to talk about his faith, not in a liturgical sense, but the major values that have driven him in his faith, and to show and talk about very specific examples. If I may, I'd like to return to Herbert Hoover, because I actually think there's a very good example in Herbert Hoover, not in his administration, but in his campaign.
Yeah, let's hear it.
Hoover was seen as cold, as impersonal, at the very time that the politics of personality was becoming very important to running for the president. He absolutely refused to show anything of his personal side. His campaign staff actually broke into his apartment and stole photographs of him and his family off his wall and issued them to the newspapers because they knew it was crucial in the campaign for Herbert Hoover to show the American voters that, in fact, he had a personality, that he could be warm, that he cared about his family, et cetera, et cetera.
Brian Ballow in Charlottesville, Virginia. I have to say, I don't see that in the excerpts that we've seen so far. Maybe he's got that up his sleeve. Maybe he doesn't want to show that too early on. We'll know tonight. We'll come back and look at that, hear from our listeners from all over the country calling in. Brian Ballow at the University of Virginia, Major Garrett of the National Journal with us right here, Congressman Michael Burgess of Texas. Listeners, you can join us. Do you need to connect, know his heart, or do you know enough? Does he have to knock it out of the park tonight or just be the un-Obama? We're at 1-800-423-8255, 800-423-TALK. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point, and we are in Tampa on the last night of the Republican convention in the home stretch to Mitt Romney's big speech tonight, looking at the man, the moment, and what he needs to do. Congressman Michael Burgess of Texas is with us, Tea Party caucus member from the 26th District of Texas. Major Garrett of the National Journal is here, and Professor Brian Ballow is with us from the University of Virginia, historian there with a long eye on governance and the United States presidency. You can join the conversation. Are you already sold? Are you unsellable in the nonstop media age? Does this speech, any particular speech, really matter anymore? Can Mitt Romney thread the needle tonight? How? 800-423-8255 is our number. 800-423-TALK. We've had John Boehner up on the stage, and we've got more coming up even as we speak right here. There'll be a whole procession up to Governor Romney on Tuesday night. It was Ann Romney who said, "This man will not fail."
This is the man who will work harder than anyone so that we can work a little less hard. I can't tell you what will happen over the next 4 years, but I can only stand here tonight as a wife and a mother and a grandmother, an American, and make you this solemn commitment. This man will not fail.
There you go. His wife is for him, but she was pretty appealing on the stage the other night, and she felt sounded pretty pretty certain about that. Let's hear from our listeners, Jacqueline in Camden, Maine. Jacqueline, thanks very much for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
How are you?
Very
great
well.
Great program.
Thank you.
I'm actually registered independent.
Okay.
I don't care about the warm and fuzzy. I really don't want to hear how they want to put their heart on the sleeve.
Okay.
I want to hear the facts. And he, as far as I'm concerned as a voter, and I am very undecided right now.
All right.
I voted for our president, Mr. Obama, and I think he has not done as bad a job as a lot of people say he has. He's only one man. He is the leader, and he is at the head of the table, but it takes everybody in an organization to work together.
Yeah, but with all that, you're still undecided. So Mitt Romney would really like to have you. What do you want to hear or not hear tonight?
I need to hear how he's going to pull everybody together. The politics have gotten so polarized. Conservatives are so ultra-conservative. Liberals are ultra-liberal. They're all the way to the opposite end. Nobody seems to be coming to the middle much anymore. Thank God for Senator Susan Collins.
Vanishing Bree, anything you don't want to hear from the stage, Jacqueline?
I don't want to hear a whole bunch of religion brought into our politics. I want to see separation of church and state.
Let us pick both of those up, and I'm happy for your call from Camden. Major, what about it? Brian Ballow says he needs to speak to his faith. Jacqueline says she doesn't want to hear about religion.
Well, and there you have the diversity of opinion in America in miniature. And one thing I want to address, what I was describing earlier was the expectations for the speech based on the excerpts released by the campaign, conversations with delegates, and my conversations with Romney advisors. I don't care one whit what Romney says tonight.
Got
I'm
it.
A reporter.
Understood.
And I'm not an advocate, and I don't care. I have no dog in this hunt one way or
Absolutely
the other.
Understood.
But that's what my reporting has informed me. And the excerpts led me to believe. What he does, we'll see.
Is Jacqueline going to hear about religion tonight? There he's got at least one prominent Mormon signed up to be there, and we're understanding that they will talk about Mormonism tonight.
Yes. I don't think anyone seeking the highest office in our land historically has avoided the topic or wanted to avoid the topic of how faith informs their construct of America's future, how they align themselves with it, and the values they would bring to presidential decisions.
Mitt Romney talked about that in Mormonism in 2008, but in this campaign season, he's not really gone there.
He's not gone there, but if there's ever a stage, this would be at least to do it in some degree as a reflection upon who he is and what values he brings. But I don't expect a tremendous amount of attention paid to that topic in this speech.
Brian Ballow, Jacqueline, the other thing she wants is to have somebody who can pull everybody together. This was one of the primary selling points of Barack Obama. That was supposed to be a big part of Hope and Change. We're not blue states and red states. We're all Americans here. Do you see Mitt Romney set up to do that? Can he speak to that desire tonight in this polarized country? And will it redound to his electoral benefit if he does?
Yeah, first of all, I want to make it clear, I'm not commenting on, what I think Mitt Romney is going to do. You asked me what I think he should do.
Yeah,
and
got it.
I think that your last caller was right on the mark. I think a lot of those undecided voters want to see Washington come together. They want more visible signs of what Representative Burgess was talking about, and I think they want pragmatic compromise, and they want to see people move forward. I mean, one of the dangers, one of the things Romney has to overcome is, the convention is excited, the people there, there's strong feelings. He's in some ways got to look past the room in front of him at that undecided voter in Maine who voted for Obama last time and convince her that he will be the kind of compromiser that, for whatever reason, Barack Obama, in many instances, was not able to be.
Congressman Burgess, how about it? We've got listeners who will have known Mitt Romney as a governor. He ran against Ted Kennedy as a very moderate Republican. Now he describes himself as a severe conservative. You're in the Tea Party caucus. Our caller, Jacqueline, wants somebody who will pull everybody together. Can Mitt Romney do that and keep your support? Can he be a severe conservative who satisfies, let's say, the Tea Party, which was very big in 2010, and reach out across the aisle, across the country, to bring in people of different views as well? Or is that just beyond the U.S. presidency now?
No, of course you can. And that's
how Mitt
what you're talking about is, can he be a leader? And I think tonight, and certainly during the debates coming up, he can contrast his leadership style with the current chief executive. And the contrast could be quite stark. We have not seen President Obama on Capitol Hill except for the State of the Union address and that one time in September when he wanted to come yell at the House members. Otherwise, he's been non-vis on the Capitol. But he's the leader of our country. We have this problem with reconciliation coming up on January 2nd, mm-hmm. regardless of who wins the election.
The cliff.
We should be talking about this.
If it a severe conservative comes to Congress, how are Democrats going to react? And if he's not severely conservative, how are you going to react in the Tea Party caucus?
Well, look, it is going to require being willing to sit down with the other side. We have not seen that out of this administration. President Obama came to the Republican conference right before the stimulus bill came to a vote, but not when it was being written. We were not asked for input while it was being written.
We saw last summer John Boehner over at the White House and a bunch of Democrats, and it all blew up.
Well, again, I would submit that you need to be in the people's house and come talk to the conference. Come talk, and I expect that Mitt Romney will be that type of leader, and I expect that he will talk to Democrats as well as Republicans. And I will not vilify him for that. I welcome that. I want him to do that. What did we hear out of President Obama early in his administration? We won. End of story. You are not necessary as House Republicans. Your numbers are so few as to be irrelevant.
Major Garrett, is it bridgeable? Would Mitt Romney bridge it? Does he want to talk about bridging tonight, or does that lose the people who want big conservative change out of him?
Well, look, let's be practical and realistic about this. Mitt Romney may very well talk about bridging gaps. Most people who seek national office in this country now necessarily have to, because it is a latent desire of most Americans, Republican and Democrat, mm-hmm. to have things done, to move things forward. But the practical realities in our country is we have become an increasingly polarized populist politically. The voting alignments in Congress have become more ritualistically and predictably Republican and Democrat, liberal and conservative. And all you need to do is go to the National Journal website to find the voting patterns from 1982 to where we are now. I'll give you two quick statistics. Mm-hmm. In 1982, the broad middle was comprised of 57 Democrats and 357 members of Congress. In 2012, there was not one senator in the Republican Party more liberal than the most conservative Democrat, or vice versa, and there were seven in the House that constituted or fell into that little middle ground. So we went from 357 in 1982 to seven
in 2012 and from 57 in the Senate to zero. Okay?
George Will says American voters have to decide. Now, they can't have it both ways.
They can't have it both ways. They want partisan principled alignment and they want things to get done. You have to reconcile, and I would take the congressman's point. Every leader has a style, and if you're president of the United States, and I spend a lot of time covering Congress, you have to engage Congress all the time, consistently, persistently. You have to be willing to have conversations where you don't get your way, where you give a little and you get a little. You give a little and you get a little. One of the great practitioners of that was Lyndon Johnson, who got a civil rights bill through Everett Dirksen.
But you've got a lot of people saying now even Ronald Reagan did it as
well.
Did that
with
Tip O'Neill. But you've got people saying Ronald Reagan would fail now. His own party would not accept that.
It's an interesting topic. I mean, Ronald Reagan, you have to understand, was consistent and set in motion a conservative movement defined by those times. Would he be inconsistent with the conservative moment as defined now? I don't think he would be. I think he'd be right alongside it.
In his rhetoric, he might be consistent, but could he reach across the aisle and get those deals done? Adam, in Santa Barbara, California. Adam, thanks very much for calling. You're on the air.
Thanks, Tom. I was calling to speak to the as an independent voter, looking to see what George Romney might have to say tonight.
Or his son, Mitt. Maybe channeling a little deaf Father George. We got it, Adam. We've got it.
Okay. I'm a 27-year-old father of two, and my wife is a legal immigrant on her green card. And what I'm looking for is something from Mitt Romney, something from the Republican Party that, speaks to my needs. I mean, I hear a lot about Medicare and what Obama's going to do to Medicare, but I'm a little concerned because I actually like Obamacare. I like what Obamacare is going to do for me beginning in 2014. And what really upset me a little bit last night from the vice presidential candidate, Paul Ryan, was this idea that it's wrong to take from Medicare and to fund Obamacare. Well, Obamacare is helping me. It feels a little generational warfare there to scare old people and to say it's not okay for me to get some kind of help from the government.
Adam, what would you like to hear from Republicans then? I mean, Paul Ryan said last night, you know, what we can give people is opportunity. He described himself, you know, as a young man and a waiter, waiting tables. And now here he is up for the vice presidency of the United States. That's about freedom, he said. Get government out of the way. How does that work for you, Adam?
Well, I've voted for George Bush twice, and I voted for John McCain in 2008. And there was a time when I believed that, tax cuts and deregulation would create a wonderful economy for us all. And I have to say, I just don't believe that line of thinking anymore.
Adam, I really appreciate your call. Congressman Burgess, you know, there's somebody who's voted both sides, and he just doesn't believe anymore in the sort of tax cut way to success for him and his wife with the green card and his two children. He's 27 years old. Can Mitt Romney sell him, or is that just not in the target zone?
Oh, I believe so. And certainly, of course, Paul Ryan can speak to that demographic.
But he didn't like that last night.
Well, may not speak to this voter, but can certainly speak to that demographic. You know, 20 years ago when I was Paul Ryan's age, my hospital administrator made me go downtown to Dallas and listen to this fellow come talk about kind of the future and health care. It was former Senator Paul Tsongas. And it was right after Bill Clinton had given his health security address.
Democrat out of Massachusetts, of course,
right?
Famously.
And Bill Clinton had just given his big health care speech, and Senator Tsongas, I thought, well, great, what am I going to hear here? But Senator Tsongas said, I hope you heard the president's speech last night. There wasn't a dry eye in the House because he proposed five new entitlement programs, and we can't afford the ones we have. And I thought, what did I just hear? As Senator Tsongas described a world 25 years from that day in 1993, which is just 5 years from now, where there would be intergenerational conflict, the likes of which this country has never seen, because this demographic cannot afford to pay for the promises that my demographic made to itself.
And yet there's Adam, Brian Bala. He's sitting in Santa Barbara. He's got a family. He hears the Republican message from Paul Ryan last night. Unleash this economy, get government out of the way. And he's thinking, hey, wait a minute, I kind of like Obamacare. Can Mitt Romney speak to him in your view, Brian?
Yeah, I think that Mitt Romney can. But again, I think that Mitt Romney needs to connect with Adam and make Adam, what Adam literally said was he wants Mitt Romney to pay attention to him. And I don't think
he wants Obamacare, which Mitt Romney's promised to repeal.
Yeah,
maybe he's just a little bit beyond Mitt Romney's range.
He might be, but, you know, I think we're all kind of underestimating the power of the personal connection or a sense of personal connection. Franklin Roosevelt didn't connect with tens of millions of Americans because they understood the details of his policy. What they understood was the tone of his voice in those fireside chats. And Mitt Romney doesn't have to become Franklin Roosevelt. He's not Franklin Roosevelt. But, you know,
for someone who's
criticized for being part of the 1%, Roosevelt was very much a part of the 1%. Yet by revealing what you might call the more personal side and by putting policy in personal terms, Franklin Roosevelt, who was very much a part of the 1%, was able to connect with the poor and the dispossessed and those in the middle. And,
well,
and
I don't know. It sounds like a jump to Adam to me. He wants the Obama health care reforms. Mitt Romney says he's going to repeal them, and that's a solemn promise to this House tonight.
Well,
one more,
you know,
Tanya
Tom,
in Miami. Tom with, one more, if I may. Tanya in Miami. Our time is short here, Brian. Tanya, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. I just have a comment. I live in South Florida. The problem with the housing situation here is critical to increase jobs, and the banks do not have any incentive, tax-wise or whatever, to get to work with the people that live in their homes that are trying to renegotiate or try to get modifications.
Yep.
If you're talking about increasing jobs in South Florida, that's the economy here, and also just, you know, who's speaking to that? If you want to make
housing, let us pick it up. Our time is short. Tanya's in Miami, Major. Housing is huge in Florida. Florida's big in play. Can Mitt Romney say or do something to help those folks?
Well, if he says something about housing, he'll be the first Republican here who did. It's the great missing issue in this entire national campaign. I'm not saying that housing is the only thing that would revive the U.S. economy, but it's a significant part of it. And it is a structural weakness of the Obama administration. Even the most sympathetic Obama watchers in economic circles and political circles concede openly that this was an enormous missed opportunity on the part of the White House to deal with or try to create some creative solutions for housing. And I've talked to many Obama officials who understand it's the one thing they really didn't even swing at. They just completely missed. And the Republicans seem to me have a policy opening here, but they haven't seized upon it. And it'll be interesting. I don't think I'm going to hear anything or very much on housing next week in Charlotte. We're going to have two national conventions with a slack housing market in many key swing states, and we're not going to hear a word about it.
Everybody's got the issue that they're listening for. It may or may not be that either of the candidates speaks directly to that one, and yet they've got to pull them into their tent if they want to win the election. Mitt Romney with that challenge tonight. Can he put up that big message that voters with all their individual concerns will look at him and say, he's the guy? Major Garrett with the National Journal, it's great to have you here on this night, last night of the Republican convention. Thank you so much for joining us.
Tom, always a pleasure. Thank you.
Brian Ballow at the University of Virginia. Wonderful of you to join us. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Tom.
And Congressman Michael Burgess of Texas, always great to see you. Thanks for
coming
by.
Anytime, Tom. Glad to do it.
From Tampa, I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Thanks for joining us.